It's a great personal pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine, Dr. William McClellan, who is professor of clinical medicine at Emory University, and I would say one of the leading lights of epidemiology of chronic kidney disease in the United States. We're very glad that he has consented to speak to us today about the prevalence and current treatment of chronic kidney disease, the background. Bill?
Thank you, Paul. It's a delight to be here and a real privilege to address this audience on epidemiology and patterns of care of people with chronic kidney disease. And I'll talk about what we can learn about the epidemic of chronic kidney disease and end-stage renal disease and what observational studies has to teach us about the care of these patients. This slide, I think, is familiar to all of us. It is from the USRDS, and it shows trends in the incidence and prevalence of end-stage renal disease. When Fritz Port first showed me this slide in a much earlier version a number of years ago, I was impressed that the rate of increase of incident patients in the United States back 4 or 5 years ago was still increasing monotonically and had not reached its inflection point where it would begin to curve off. And as you can see, that pattern is continuing during the last few years, and it's projected to continue to increase unless we do something about the epidemic. Unlike epidemics of infectious disease, chronic disease epidemics occur over long periods of time, and the actual chronic end-stage disease, and this is an estimate in 1999 for the individuals on end-stage renal disease, reflect the slow progression of people with chronic kidney disease over a prolonged period of time. These are data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey that randomly sampled individuals throughout the population in the United States, and among other things, allowed Camille Jones to estimate the level of renal function in these individuals. And this is actually serum creatinine of 1.5, 1.7, and 2 milligrams per deciliter or greater. And what you can see is that there are substantial proportions of the U.S. population, nearly 11 million individuals with serum creatinines in excess of 1.5 milligrams per deciliter, and as many as 800,000 in excess of 2. The recent estimates using Krockhoff-Gault estimating formulas actually increase this number of at-risk individuals. Now, the problem with a slide like this is that it's a very disconnected, if you will, from the realities of everyday practice. And so what I'm going to talk to you about is how to translate those observational studies from NHANES and the USRDS into some detection strategies that will allow us to identify in familiar settings individuals at risk from chronic kidney disease. And I'm going to show you data from three groups, high-risk groups that are constituted by family members of end-stage renal disease patients. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the prevalence of chronic kidney disease and physician practices, and then finally the prevalence of chronic kidney disease in patients who are hospitalized for cardiovascular problems. And these studies are currently ongoing in our shop at Emory and at the Georgia Medical Care Foundation. These data were shown from the National Kidney Foundation of Georgia KEEP Screening Initiative, which was funded in part by our host tonight, Orthobiotech, at the a session earlier today. And basically, what we did was we went to dialysis facilities throughout the state of Georgia, asked the dialysis staff to recruit members of families to come into an off-center screening site. And at that site, we measured their blood pressure, we checked their blood sugar, we got a urinalysis and a serum creatinine and some anthropometric information as well as information about their medical history. 184 people at the time we constructed this slide had participated in that screening activity who told us at the beginning of the visit that they had a family member who was an ESRD patient. And this shows you the Krockhoff-Gault creatinine clearance for those 184 individuals, and 14% of them walking in off the street simply because a family member said you really need to get checked had a creatinine clearance of less than 60 mLs per minute. There was a substantial proportion of those individuals that had either blood pressure that was elevated and they were unaware of it, or that was elevated and they were aware of it but not on treatment, or they were on treatment but their blood pressure was not controlled. That's these three pies right here, slices of the pie right here. Nearly 30% of these family members had uncontrolled high blood pressure. Similarly, 10% had either a blood sugar on a random finger stick of greater than 200 milligrams per deciliter, or had an elevated blood sugar with a previous history of diabetes mellitus. So walking off the street, about a third of the patients had uncontrolled, or a third of these family members had uncontrolled high blood pressure. 10% of them had evidence for hyperglycemia. We also measured a hemoglobin on them and defined individuals with a hemoglobin greater than 14 as having no evidence of anemia. Men with a hemoglobin between 12 and 14, women between 10 and 12 as having mild anemia, and those with less than 10 grams per deciliter as having severe anemia. And what you can see is by level or stratum of renal function greater than or equal to 90, 60, 90, and less than 60 mLs per minute, the prevalence of severe anemia was elevated twofold in the individuals with moderately severe anemia. Another way of saying that, and I regretted not having the slide constructed in a different way, had we shown you the prevalence of anemia by level of GFR, you would have seen that anemia increases as GFR, estimated Krakow-Gault GFR falls. So what we know is that family members of patients that we deal with on a day-to-day basis have a high prevalence of chronic kidney disease as manifested by a diminished GFR. Also, a third of them had one plus or greater proteinuria. I didn't show you those data. They have poorly controlled hypertension and diabetes, and they frequently are anemic, and the anemia tends to increase as their level of renal function deteriorates. And again, I didn't show you these data, but many of these patients are unaware. In fact, 86% of the individuals who had creatinine clearance less than 60 were unaware of their impaired renal function. The next study I'd like to share with you is also a study that's being supported by OrthoBiotech. This is a national multi-center study that has engaged 250 primary care physicians, nephrologists, and endocrinologists across the country. And the purpose of this study is to define the prevalence of chronic kidney disease in these practices, and within the patients with chronic kidney disease, the prevalence of anemia, and that's why it's called the prevalence of anemia and early renal insufficiency. To get into the study, you have to have a serum creatinine between 2 and 6 if you're a male, 1.5 and 6 if you're a female. And at the time that these data were pulled together, we had enrolled about a third of the total 5,000 patients that will be enrolled in the study at study conclusion. We had screened 120,000 charts and had found about 2.5% of the patients whose charts were coming across the desk and who had not been previously identified as having chronic kidney disease fell into those inclusion criteria. This translates into a detection rate of about one patient every other week in these primary care practices. Not a tremendously large volume, but not nearly as unusual as one might suspect. These patients were older, tended to be female, they were disproportionately African American, and half of them had renal failure attributed to diabetes mellitus. They had a lot of comorbid conditions, and I want you to keep some of these prevalences in mind. Fifth of them had had a history of heart attack. Nearly a fifth had angina pectoris. A quarter of them had heart failure. 17% of them had some mention of ventricular hypertrophy in their chart. And the overwhelming majority, nearly 90% of them, were hypertensive. In this population, too, there was evidence of symptomatic renal disease. So as the Krakow-Gault estimated creatinine clearance fell from greater than 90 at risk, and the way you could get a greater than 90 creatinine clearance in this population, of course, is to have a relatively low creatinine and a large body mass. But in any event, a few of them, about 5%, fell in this stratum. And as you can see, as the creatinine clearance declined from 90 to 60 range, 60 to 30 range, 30 to 15, less than 15 mLs per minute, the prevalence of severe anemia defined as a hemoglobin less than 10 grams per deciliter, moderate anemia, 10 to 12 grams per deciliter, and any anemia increased to the point where just at the point of severe chronic renal insufficiency as defined by the new DOCI guidelines, nearly half of the individuals had some degree of anemia, and about 15% were severely anemic. None of these patients who were anemic were receiving any therapy for their anemia at the time of enrollment in the study. So the PERI study tells us that chronic kidney disease is prevalent among the patients that we see in our day-to-day practices as primary care physicians, that anemia increases in prevalence in these patients as their renal function deteriorates, and cardiovascular comorbidity is common among these patients. And that's probably the way the patients are coming through our practices. They're not coming to us as patients with chronic kidney disease, but they're being seen by our colleagues as a patient with heart failure or ischemic heart disease with some mild and probably insignificant degree of anemia, and some milder and probably insignificant degree of chronic kidney disease. And I hope the data from this final study that I'm going to share with you will dissuade you from that description of mild anemia or mild renal insufficiency. These are data that we developed in part of our outcome studies with the Medicare population in Georgia. This is a retrospective cohort study wherein we randomly sampled Medicare beneficiaries who had been discharged from Georgia hospitals during 1998. This was a random probability sample. So this represents what you and I are doing in Georgia anyway on a day-to-day basis. There were 645 patients sampled. They had a final diagnosis at the time of discharge of congestive heart failure, and they were alive at discharge. Their mean age was 76 years, 60% of them were female, and 71% were white. Again, a disproportionate number of blacks, 29% for the Georgia population, it's closer to 18%. And in their medical histories, there was also a disproportionate or a very frequent pattern of cardiovascular comorbidity, as you would expect in patients who are discharged with heart failure. Two-thirds were hypertensive. 44% were diabetic, a fifth had had a stroke, a quarter of them had had a myocardial infarction, and half of them had a history of coronary artery disease, 15% had angina pectoris. Now, these are not mutually exclusive diagnoses, but the point is that this is a population that has a lot of cardiovascular disease and probably would be labeled as individuals with heart disease. When we look at their serum creatinines, just under two-thirds, 62%, had a serum creatinine of less than 1.5 milligrams per deciliter. And 38% of them had some degree of renal insufficiency, either a serum creatinine between 1.5 and 2 or in excess of 2 milligrams per deciliter. It would have been nice to convert these to Krockhoff-Gault creatinine clearances. Unfortunately, the primary study did not entail a need for weights, and so we were unable to do that. But I think even just using serum creatinines, this in an elderly population is unequivocal chronic kidney disease. This is the pattern of anemia among these individuals with heart failure and chronic kidney disease. And so what we've done here is, again, here are the strata of renal function less than 1.5, 1.5 to 2, and greater than 2 milligrams per deciliter serum creatinine. And this is, these stacked bar graphs show you the proportion of individuals who had a hematocrit. Again, there was no hemoglobin data for this particular observational group, who had a hematocrit greater than 40, 36 to 40, 30 to 36, and less than 30%. And what you can see is, much as we observed in the PERI cohort, as renal function declines, the proportion of individuals who have severe anemia, defined as less than 30%, increases dramatically in this group of patients. And similarly, the proportion of individuals who would by any definition be non-anemic falls to really a trivial percent if you think about these individuals as being heart failure patients and not as patients with complex cardiorenal problems. This is a Kaplan-Meier plot showing you the survival over follow-up for these individuals by hemoglobin stratum. And so here's those individuals at discharge who had a hematocrit greater than 40, 36 and less than 30. And what you can see is that survival in this population of individuals with heart failure who were anemic began to diverge almost immediately after discharge, and that the presence of anemia of any degree, red, green, or blue, conferred substantial increased risk of morbidity and mortality following discharge and continuing out into throughout the end of follow-up. Now, I think I have misplaced a slide here, but I need to tell you now that 30%, 38% of these patients also had chronic kidney disease. And when we entered the presence of chronic kidney disease into multivariate models with the level of hemoglobin and controlled for other factors including age, race, sex, and other comorbidities, we found that both chronic kidney disease and the presence of anemia had an independent effect on survival. And that if you had chronic kidney disease defined as a hemoglobin, as a creatinine of 1.5 or greater, you had a 28% increased risk of mortality during the first year of follow-up. If you had anemia defined as a hemoglobin of or hematocrit of 30% or less, you had a 26% risk of death during the first year. And if you had the combined presence of anemia and chronic kidney disease, as did nearly 80% of the anemic patients, you had a twofold increase of risk and death compared to the non-anemic patients. These patients weren't particularly well served with by the medical care at discharge. ACE use in these patients, particularly those who had left ventricular systolic dysfunction, declined with increasing serum creatinine, and even in those who had putatively normal serum creatinines of less than 1.4 milligrams per deciliter, only 58% of them were sent home on an ACE inhibitor. And that fell to 42% of those individuals with serum creatinines greater than 2. It might be argued that this is rational therapy, but there's substantial evidence to support the use of ACE inhibitors in patients with heart failure, even in the presence of mild to moderate elevations in serum creatinine. So, in summary, end-stage renal disease in the United States is epidemic. The epidemic reflects the slow progression of patients with chronic kidney disease through a prolonged illness. These individuals belong to groups that can be readily identified and accessed through our dialysis clinics, our practices, and our hospitals. And that when we access, screen, and identify these individuals and look at their management, what we're likely to find is that there are substantial opportunities to improve the blood pressure control of these individuals, that many of them will be diabetic but poorly treated, that they'll frequently not be benefited by the presence of an angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, even when it's indicated for conditions like left ventricular systolic dysfunction, and they'll frequently be anemic and potential candidates for correction of their anemia because of their chronic kidney disease, not because of the cardiovascular comorbidity. And with that, I'll close.